Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other. And we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anna's Owl Ministries podcast.
How would you like to be haunted by and teased by Luke's Force Ghost? Well, today we're going to be discussing that and so much more as we review the screenplay for Star Wars Duel of the Fates as part of our All Reading Counts series. We're excited for this one. You know, all of our All Reading Counts, just a way for us to promote literacy and our local libraries. This episode talking about Duel of the Fates, what Duel of the Fates is, for people who want to know. It's the original plan for Episode 9, Star Wars Episode 9. This is before Disney decided to make The Rise of Skywalker instead, which is the canon Episode 9. That means for this episode, we're assuming that people listening are at least familiar with the sequel trilogy of Star Wars going into the discussion. If anything I said so far sounds like mumbo jumbo, that's what all of this is probably going to sound like. But if you've watched the sequel trilogy and you're like, okay, I know what you're talking about, cool, you're on the right page. I'm Joshua Newell. I am here with the reason for the season, if the season is any season that exists, the one and only DJ Tiberius One Blackwell. How's it going?
Good.
Yeah. And today we are excited to jump into it. But before we do anything else, we're going to shout out, what's the last thing you read that was a different piece of literature than the kind we're reading today? That wasn't a screenplay, which probably is anything you read. I assume you don't read a ton of screenplays.
Not frequently. Yeah. It's not, you know, wake up every day, read a screenplay. That's pretty much only happened today, ever.
I mean, you could, though. They're short, it turns out.
They are short.
Yeah.
Probably a manga. Probably a manga. It was probably Ichi the Witch.
What's that about?
Boy witch in a girl witch world. Mm.
Well, shocking to some people. Half of my statement's going to be shocking and half is not. The last thing I read was also a manga. The part that's not shocking is it was Kingdom Hearts 358x2 manga. Turns out, even if it's manga, if it's Kingdom Hearts, I still like it. I'm thinking this might end up being a gateway drug. Like, this is like the training wheels for me to learn how to read manga. Like, maybe if it's a story I already love, then I get used to the format, and then I can get new stories with the same format. But easing my way into it. Yeah. That's the goal.
Yeah. I probably could just read One Piece.
I could?
Yeah.
That would take so long. Oh, man. But before we get into today's episode, I do want to remind, if you're on a laptop, please consider rating and reviewing our show on Podchaser or GoodPod. It's going to help our show gain recognition and make it easier to find in other search engines like Google, Yahoo, AOL, maybe, if that exists still. SG.
Yeah.
If you're on your phone, consider rating, reviewing, or commenting on our show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you know, those apps that you're probably listening to this on. That's going to help prioritize our show in those apps' algorithms, again, which are where most people listen to podcasts. So thank you so much for your free support in advance. That only took you a couple seconds. It was super easy, but we appreciate it because it helped us a whole lot.
Yeah.
Also, we got to shout out our sponsors today. Shouting out Aaron Hardy. Aaron, you rock. Thank you so much for being one of our supporters. I want to let everybody else know, if you want your own shout out, you too can support our show for just $3 a month on one of the three platforms, Apple Podcasts, Captivate, or Patreon. Again, this is part of our All Reading Counts series. So if you want some more All Reading Counts, There is a link down in the show's description where you can see all of the episodes we've done about this. And want to remind you, if you purchase any of our All Reading Counts merchandise or buy our Patreon content for this, because you can buy separately just the Patreon stuff that we put out for All Reading Counts, whatever money we do make, we will be donating to local libraries. So if you like libraries and like us, two for one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not all local libraries. It's just my local library.
So far, I think it's just been mine, and then specifically the library in Taylorsville, Kentucky, I donated to once because someone bought something.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah. Just a local library. Depending on my mood, mostly. Unless, when you give a gift, you tell me specifically which library to donate to, then I'll just do that.
Yeah.
Unless you're like, donate it to Library of We Really, Really, Really Hate TJ. I probably won't donate to that library. Actually, I might, because it would be funny. But that's different.
Yeah. We're not donating to the Library of Congress, though.
Yeah. True.
They get enough money.
Yeah. But we are going to jump into today's episode. This is going to be a fun one. Duel of Fates, it's wild. I heard a lot about it. I've skimmed it before, but I never actually just sat down and read the whole thing until like last week, maybe. Did it specifically for this, so I'm going to have a lot of fun with it. Before we get into the script for the Star Wars that was never made, we want to talk about what is All Reading Counts and why we might think that's a thing that matters, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So TJ, for you, or for, you know, if someone's watching this or listening to this and they've never seen one of our All Reading Counts episodes before, how would you describe this initiative and what we mean when we talk about All Reading Counts?
So it's kind of an effort to destigmatize the act of, you know, saying, oh, I read a book, and then you read the audiobook version and people tell you that doesn't count. Yeah, it counts. Of course it counts. So yeah. That extends, obviously, to, you know, comic books, manga, screenplays, anything, any reading, you're consuming written material, it counts. And if you're going to say it doesn't count, then you're just going to say no blind people have ever read anything ever. That puts you on the wrong side of history. So,
yeah. Yeah. Don't be on the wrong side of history. They don't even have McDonald's.
No, they don't.
Yeah. but, you know, I completely agree with everything TJ said. Weirdly enough, right now I've been going back through that 70s show. I say back through. I've never watched it before. My wife's going back through it and I'm enjoying it for the first time. And it's really interesting how many times, you know, because, you know, since the 90s when that 70s show was made, confusing, I know. But since then, I feel like society's progressed a lot, so we don't have as much stigma, but the stigma exists. But it's still just really jarring to watch this, where it's like someone's talking about, oh, yes, I read a really great book. And then Eric or whatever is like, oh, yeah, me too. I read this comic. And everybody makes fun of them because, like, oh, that's stupid. And I'm like, man, I'm really glad that we couldn't do that on TV today. Because, like, I think it's important that we destigmatize this because of all the benefits that reading has that can be experienced across these different things. You know, we mentioned audiobooks. Studies show that people who listen to audiobooks have the same benefits that you get from other types of reading, or like comics, manga, all that kind of stuff. Do you want to shout in any of the benefits you know from reading before I try to wreck my brain for what I remember?
I mean, generally, it's like increased wellness, depth of vocabulary, things that only matter if you're an elitist, but improved cognitive function late in life, that sort of thing. It's super beneficial for you to read to keep your brain healthy and active. It's a lot easier than most of the other paths to that. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, because this isn't a science episode, I don't want to get too much into it, but, you know, when it comes to like Alzheimer's and like a lot of your mental decay kind of stuff we see, there's a lot of correlation between when we started watching TV instead of reading books, and a lot of correlation to, you know, sugar in our diets increasing exponentially as well, which is why Alzheimer's sometimes is referred to type 4 or type 3 diabetes.
4.
Yeah. But we won't get into that. I will say, you know, the cognitive thing later in life, that's super important. Your ability to be creative, think on your feet. You know, if you know, to like the kind of people who are like at work and suddenly they just found like a really intuitive, like, you're like, wow, how did you come up with that? Well, they're probably a reader. Readers are more creative, you know, and just general longevity of life is mentioned. You want to live long? I mean, that's kind of cool. Vocabulary is definitely a big one. It just keeps your brain sharp. You know, it's like working out a muscle, except for I don't think the brain's a muscle. Pretty sure it's not.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I think technically it's involuntary muscle.
Yeah. It's one of those weird things because it's like,
not sure.
Don't it's remember. An organ, but most of like the stuff that we think of it like as our mind is more like has to do with electronics. They're it's all robots.
It's definitely.
Yeah. But anyway, that said, yeah, reading's important. We think it's important. We want you to read, even if it's a screenplay, which is not a kind of literature I've read before. But reading this, I'll say, I had to use my imagination a lot more than when I read most other books. Like a lot of regular novels, they're going to describe stuff well enough that like I'm imagining it, but I'm doing my best to imagine it the way the author said, because like they told me how to imagine it. Nah, this is a script. They're going to have concept art. We're going to show some of the concept art here, but like I read this before I saw any of it, and it's like, all right, gray BB-8. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'll just imagine what a gray BB-8 looks like.
Yeah. Just graphite BB-8. Yes.
Yeah. Speaking of which, concept art is sick. This is one of those, like, you know, I think I would love everyone to be on our YouTube to like increase our subscriptions and all that. But like, if you're the kind of nerd who likes concept art, this actually might be one of the episodes that's worth going to the YouTube for.
Yeah.
Because like graphite BB-8 really does look cool. And you're like, okay, seeing the concept art, I actually kind of get why no one was questioning why he was there. He's just a spy. Yeah. He's great.
It's really funny. I wish they would have, you know, at least done this. And at some point, just paint him gray. Fit right in.
Yeah, man, it was great. I loved all of this, even from the very beginning. And then going through, like, even like it's talking about different type of stormtroopers that were like buff troopers or something. Like, what were they?
Brute troopers.
Yeah. I have no idea what that could mean. I was just imagining a lot of Phasmas. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how they describe it.
Yeah, so, I mean, you definitely exercise your imagination a lot. I am really curious. So for those who don't know, our patrons voted on this. We let our patrons vote for which thing we read whenever we pick. So, like, we chose screenplays, and we gave, like, a list for our patrons to vote on. They voted this one. I'm kind of curious what it would be like to read a screenplay from a movie I know really well. This is a movie that doesn't exist. So we're not super familiar with it, so we had to imagine a lot. But I'm like, I'm curious, like, if I read, like, the screenplay for Pirates of the Caribbean, would I still have to use my imagination as much, or would I, like, fill it in, because I do know what happens. I've seen it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But maybe that'll be next time. I'm sure we'll get around to screenplays again. This was fun. I enjoyed it. So, TJ, when was the first time you heard of this particular screenplay, Duel of the Fates, as, like, that alternative ending we could have got?
It's probably been a couple of years. You know, it gets thrown around every now and then, just as what could have been.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I feel like, yeah, I've heard it pretty much directly after we were all upset about Rise of Skywalker. Someone was like, hey, did you hear you can actually read the screenplay of what could have been? I was like, but I didn't actually read it. I didn't even skim it for a while, because I was kind of, honestly, I was worried. I was worried that I was going to get mad at what we got. Because I really don't like Rise of Skywalker, just full transparency. I know Will's daughter, Will likes it. It's cool. I don't.
Not a fan.
Yeah, I'm not a fan at all. And I was just like, man, I feel like I'm going to read this other script and be angry. And I just didn't want to be angry. So I didn't even skim it. One of our other mutual friends, though, did and was like, hey, you know that thing that we said would be really cool if like Luke was just like tormenting Kylo? And I was like, yeah. He's like, yeah, that happens. I'm like, oh, of course it does. Yeah.
Luke's so funny.
God, yeah. We're going to get into it later, but like this makes what Luke did in The Last Jedi make sense. To me, The Rise of Skywalker ruined that really cool thing that Luke did.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. It definitely also feels more in character for Luke. There's a part where, you know, Kylo is talking to Luke's Force Ghost because Luke just shows up and he's like, hey, what's up, dummy? And, you know, Kylo's trying to obtain the power of Mortis, and he's like, I'm gonna get stronger than you ever were. And Luke's like, really? Are you?
Good, yeah. Well, and it never, I don't think it ever explicitly states, but it pretty much clarifies, like, yeah, Luke just did this so that he could both torment Kylo and train Rey at the same time. He couldn't do that without becoming one of the four, so he just did that.
Yeah.
Because he can.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like,
because he's Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm not even a huge Luke fan. And I was like, no, that makes sense. That's awesome. but I also, like, how do you think the script has impacted like publicly like the Star Wars culture around sequels. Because like I mentioned for myself, I didn't like Rise of Skywalker, and then I was weary about it. And, like eventually I skimmed it and I was like, yeah, this would have been better. And now I read it and I'm like, it would have been so much better. But like I feel like, weirdly enough, very seldomly does like rumors of another movie impact a fan base as much, but I feel like this script being released actually did kind of make some noise.
Yeah. Well, it's because it is Star Wars. It's a multi-billion dollar franchise, even at the time. And it does just kind of make waves when they release something that a lot of people thinks is really bad and stupid. And then they also release the alternative.
Yeah. Which also,
it doesn't happen.
I am kind of curious, like, if I would read the screenplay for Rise of Skywalker, would I still think it's stupid? I think I would. Because a lot of my problems really is like story just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, visually it's great, phenomenal.
Yeah, but I mean, even like this isn't a Rise of Skywalker bash session, but like even like how they follow up on like the characters' progressions and like the ending of all the character stories, I'm like, so Rose just
it's just a misstep,
doesn't exist. Finn doesn't get any conclusion. Like there's a lot of stuff that I was like, so I feel like even if I read the script, I'd still probably be like, nah. Not for me.
Yeah. We should read it.
Yeah. Maybe that'll be a Patreon exclusive in a couple weeks. We could come back and be like,
Yeah,
we read that screenplay. It is bad. Or now we were wrong. We read the, if we would have just only released the script, we'd all love it. That'd be funny. It'd be funny if that's what we discovered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey guys, Christian here to talk about our YouTube page. That's where you can go find us at youtube.com/@systematicgeekology. We have exclusive stuff there, exclusive videos where you can just hear other topics that you'll never hear on the podcast proper. These include things like comic book catch up, where we're discussing the newest comics that we're reading, Friday Night Frights, where Joe Day and I explore a cryptozoological, paranormal, ufological item of discussion. Has a lot of good fun there. Have a lot of great times with him. We have spontaneous YouTube shorts that we decided to do, a topic we wanted to discuss. They're in a very short form. We do them there as well. You can interact with us live as we're recording like a What's New episode or something like that. You have something you want to chime in? Well, how can you do it unless you head over to youtube.com/@systematicgeekology. All right, guys. See ya.
So specifically, though, for Duel of the Fates, TJ, do you think that you can summarize what happens in the script?
I think so. So the script, a completely different movie. Remove all thoughts of Rise of Skywalker from your head. It's not the same. So it feels a lot more like A New Hope, right? We're starting on the infiltration of this base. BB-8's trying to get some info. And from there, we transition into seeing what the rest of the cast is doing. You know, Poe, Finn, Rey are all split up at this point, and they merge. You know, they insinuate that they've been separated for a little while, doing their own things in their own little corners of space. And they converge here to try and take down a huge, like, fuel mining station on a planet where they sent Rose to beforehand to kind of get the lay of the land and get infiltrated. And so right off the bat, Rose is included.
Yes.
Rose is already important immediately.
Actually, should.
And it. They do retain a lot of like the silliness from the original trilogy that people tend to forget about. Like they've got the weird looking aliens and they're interacting with them. They realize, Poe and Finn realize, that they've left Rose here too long. When she starts feeding one of the baby aliens in the cantina where they meet up, like, okay, yeah, maybe that was our bad. But from there, I'll say next we transition to Kylo's point of view and what he's doing. And at this time, Kylo is looking for, he doesn't know it, but he's looking for the power to consume life force, right? So he is, you know, tracing Vader's steps to get to speaking to Darth Plagueis, which is Darth Sidious, the Emperor. Well, Darth Plagueis is Darth Sidious' master. So he's still involved. You know, the Emperor is still involved. He's
dead.
In a flashback in this script, he's dead.
Yeah,
because he stays dead.
Why wouldn't he be?
Yeah, he stays dead. But we find out his master's master is alive. 700-year-old alien. Just like they just wanted a Yoda figure for the Sith, I guess. So Kylo visits Darth Vader's castle on Mustafar, finds a holocron that reveals that information, and then he goes to find this super old Sith master named Tor Valoon. And he gets like horribly disfigured by Vader's Sith holocron because it scans him. He says, that ain't Darth Vader. So he gets kind of like the visual corruption in a much more severe way.
Mm-hmm. And he has a beard.
He has a beard.
Yeah. It's important.
Because some time has passed. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if there is concept art of him just being covered in like blue, like purple veins and just horrible scarring. But he has to go through his own Darth Vader transformation where they pour molten metal on his face and that heals him for some reason because it's Star Wars. But we get him going towards that. Rey also decides to pursue the planet Mortis, which is like the origin of the Force in this script. That's kind of where the galaxy started for them. So that is their motivation. And they are separated in this script from the rest of the cast. So after a point, Kylo leaves, Rey leaves. They're both pursuing the same goal. And then we have Hux, Finn, Rose, Leia, BB-8, C-3PO, Chewbacca, Poe. Did I say Poe? They're all here. And they're all going to Coruscant eventually. And I think that is by itself is just way, way cooler than creating a bunch of new planets.
And the way back to Coruscant looks now. Go. Sick.
Mm-hmm.
Sick.
Mm-hmm. So what it builds up to is this massive siege of Coruscant. Before that, they go to like the ancient Jedi temple on Coruscant to activate a beacon that will, you know, connect the universe and allow them to break through the Imperial blockade on comms. Because they blockaded the communications network so that the rebellion couldn't build. They can't talk to each other between planets, so the rebellion can't build. So Finn and Rose initially take this quest on to activate this ancient Jedi Temple beacon. That's, they say, is from the Old Republic, which I love.
Yeah.
Little Old Republic love in this script.
Mm-hmm.
And it's super cool and awesome. So they get that fired up. And that's around the same time that Kylo Ren does obtain a good amount of power from Tor Valun, and he just stops it. He just stops it. He's immensely powerful.
Yeah, he just can't.
Yeah, but after that beacon goes up, they decide, all right, well, let's siege the capital, the Imperial capital on Coruscant. So they build this rebellion on Coruscant.
A rebellion?
To siege the capital.
How they built it? Yeah. Was it built on hope?
It was. Built on hope and blue magic.
Wow.
Yeah. So as Finn and Rose, Chewie, Leia organize this rebellion on Coruscant, Rey and Kylo are getting to this temple on Mortis to try and seize, you know, like the origin of the Force, you know, become the Force essentially in a living body. So we get their super cool duel. Rey loses their first duel, goes blind, you know, chases him down later after hearing Leia and Poe and Finn through the Force, because Rey has also reached this level of power that allows her to slip into oneness with the Force. So she blindfolds herself, goes and fights Kylo Ren. He still gets his little redemption arc, you know, toward the end of his lifespan, where he tries to absorb, because that's the power he learns. If you're Legends familiar, that's what Plagueis taught.
Mm-hmm.
He learns how to absorb life force. And as he's trying to absorb Rey's life force, because it is immense, because she is the chosen one, he's like overwhelmed with the Force and its connectivity to his mother and his, you know, enemies. He's just kind of overcome with grief, and then he loses and he dies. I do think that could have been handled better.
Wait, that's not, I don't think that's quite right. Unless that's, I misread.
What happens?
Because didn't he drain her force to heal himself and it was fine? And then he went back into the cave, lost to a hallucination of Vader. Luke antagonizes him a little bit, and then he decides actually the right thing to do is to give the Force back to Rey, and giving it back to her is what kills him.
Right? I might have read that too fast.
I think. I might be wrong. You guys read for yourselves and tell us which one of us forgot or read too fast or skipped lines, because I'm ADHD and he reads fast.
But I think while that's going on, you know, Poe, then they're sieging the capital. The Imperial capital on Coruscant, and they find out that it is a ship. You know, they just built a big ship into the city. So Rose sneaks in, and she's, you know, trying to disable its hyperdrive, because they're just going to launch it out of the planet to get away. And, you know, I really do want everyone to go read this. I don't want to spoil it too much. The Empire loses because it's Star Wars. BB-8 has a huge role to play. R2-D2 gets killed.
Temporarily.
Super tense stuff. He is a droid, you know.
Yeah.
But R2-D2 dies, and it's traumatic. It's the only good guy death, except for, like, the very beginning. And then when you get to Coruscant initially. But that happens during the final battle. Chewie picks him up. Chewie takes a bunch of shots. Chewie lives because Chewie's awesome.
Yeah. Also, Chewie flies an X-Wing.
Chewie flies an X-Wing.
Good.
Because throughout the script, he's mad that people keep calling the Millennium Falcon their ship, and it's his. They won't let him sit in his chair. But Rose can't disable the hyperdrive. She just tweaks their navs so that when they take off and try and escape, they fly straight into another planet. So Rose, kind of saves the day. Hux kills himself, which came out of nowhere, kind of.
I kind of get it, but we'll get to that later. We'll get to that later.
Yeah, he impales himself with Mace Windu's lightsaber.
That part came out of nowhere. Like, why Mace Windu's
lightsaber? Pretty awesome. He just had a collection. Mace Windu's was one of them, and he chose that one, which is sick. And then Chewie gets his medal. Rey briefly becomes one with the Force. She talks to Obi-Wan and Yoda and Luke. And
Anakin's
then
there?
She comes back
for some reason.
Yeah. Because he redeemed himself.
Yeah.
In death.
Yeah, but like, yeah.
He was powerful.
That's true. Obi-Wan, I feel like, might make less sense than Anakin, actually, now that I think about it.
I mean, those are just all the Force ghosts.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. No. And then the school at the end. That part I thought was really cool, too.
Yeah, so Finn and Rose at the end kind of decide to open, like, a safe place for Force-sensitive kids, and it's not a Jedi temple. And they're, like, searching for Rey. Poe went off to find Rey, because Poe and Rey are, like, a thing. And that's part of what allows her to overcome Kylo and to stand back up and keep fighting. Because she accepts the emotions and uses, utilizes the dark and light side of the Force within her and becomes one with the Force. She is oneness. And then she shows up again. I think it's implied to be a few years later.
Yeah. But they have the coolest part for me, too. So they have one of the children that you see throughout this film appears there. And so does the mop boy from the end of The Last Jedi. I was like, yes. And Poe and Finn.
He is a minor character, like, throughout the script.
Yeah. Yeah. As he should have been. Man. Yeah. It just... Well, they made me happy. And then there's so many subplots that I love, too. Like, stuff that just wasn't addressed by The Rise of Skywalker, that they were like, hey, we're going to do some subplots to, like, address stuff. Like, hey, what about the fact that, like, Finn used to be a stormtrooper? Wouldn't some of them recognize him? Turns out, yes. Turns out they also felt bad about what they were doing, and he's able to convince some of them to turn against the Empire, which is part of why the Rebellion works, which is just got to be the most logical thing here. The subplot of, like Chewie was cool. I'm trying to think of what else. The droids, where R2-D2 dies, but then, like, his memory banks gets transferred to BB-8, and BB-8 gets to be part of resurrecting R2-D2. Like, that was cool. Even the subplot of, like, hey, what if Balance of the Force isn't, like, good Force wins, bad Force loses? I always thought that made sense, that, like, maybe the Grey Jedi, right? Maybe, like, it's using all parts of the Force and our emotions and our wholeness for good. Force lightning, mind trick, Force push, all of it can be good, maybe? I thought that was cool, personally. But do you have any favorite subplots?
No, you are wrong. I was right.
Wait, about what?
About Kylo seeing Anakin's Force ghost and all that stuff.
He definitely does fight a hallucination of Vader.
Mm-hmm.
He does.
He doesn't.
I think you're wrong.
He sees a projection of Vader in his castle.
Then what does he? What hallucination does he fight?
At the end, he doesn't.
You're right. Right. He fights the hallucination of Vader. That's on the Sith planet, not Sith planet. When he was training with the Sith guy.
Yeah.
The end. Is that when he sees Han Solo?
Trying to learn.
When does he see Han Solo?
Yeah, towards the end.
Okay. But yeah, I know Luke antagonizes him. He does die because he gives the Force back to Rey, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't actually win.
Yeah.
That was one of the cool parts to me. It was like, Yeah, it wasn't actually like she isn't just like, hey, I'm the most powerful person ever and I just win. No, she actually lost.
She was, though. She was the most powerful person ever.
Yeah,
but that's why she lost.
But part of it also was because, like, Luke was actively training her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's not just like, oh, she's the most powerful ever. No, it turns out she's constantly training with Luke because the entire reason he gave himself up at the Last Jedi was so that he could simultaneously antagonize Kylo as a Force ghost and also train Rey because Luke's just that cool. And even, like, as a Force ghost, he's more there, more present than other Force ghosts. Like, they really make a point of, like, hey, you know how, like, that one battle, how it looked like he was actually just there? Yeah, he's figured out how to do that after death now, too.
Yeah. He's like, just present.
Yeah.
It's like, there's just barely a blue outline around him.
Yeah, turns out Luke basically just doesn't die. That's just,
which I think is fitting.
And way cooler. Yeah. And to disagree with our friends, the people we don't know who a lot of our other hosts like, Rebel Force Radio, I got to disagree with them too, because they talk about how they really try to justify Rise of Skywalker and how, like, it doesn't belittle Vader's sacrifice. I think it does. I think the Empire being able to just be alive just kind of ruined a lot of stuff. And this still makes a compelling story where the Emperor's still important. We have all the callbacks. We're honoring our legacy characters. And Vader's sacrifice isn't just like, meh, he lived through that. It's fine. You know? And yeah. Luke's sacrifice wasn't just brushed off. Because I feel like Rise of Skywalker belittled both of those sacrifices.
Yeah, but I mean, he gets to remain involved. Like, Luke is still fully involved in this story.
It's great. I would have loved it.
And it's great. And even Leia. Leia, you know, doesn't kind of die meaninglessly here.
Yeah.
And she's a great character. And Chewie finally gets his medal. This was a phenomenal send-off for our legacy characters.
Yeah. And even Han still shows up.
Yeah.
It's great.
And mostly flashbacks.
Yeah, but he does have that one, like, Force thing moment, very similar to what actually happened to Rise of Skywalker. All right, but if you were to rate just this script, Duel of Fate, 0 to 10, how would you rate?
Probably like an 8, maybe 8.5. I think this on a screen would have been phenomenal.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a 9, but I'm also going to recognize I'm super biased because I love The Last Jedi, and this makes The Last Jedi even cooler.
Yeah, I think just this script would have made it a much more cogent trilogy.
Yeah. For context, how would you rate Rise of Skywalker?
4.
I'm going to give it a 1, as I can think of some stuff I would rather watch, but there's not many things I would rather watch. Like, you know, like, there's not many things that I'm like, yeah, Rise of Skywalker is better than that. Most things that I've seen I would rather watch than Rise of Skywalker, including The Room. I gotta say, I would rather watch The Room than watch Rise of Skywalker. Funny, though. Yeah, because it makes me laugh. Rise of Skywalker doesn't even make me laugh. It just makes me kind of sad, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it really is not the worst movie ever. Like, it's still fun to watch.
There are good parts, I guess. It's just overall. There are
some good parts. The choreography is still good. Yeah. I just think Duel of the Fates does everything better.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Speaking of things that it does better, so we're talking about Duel of the Fates. How do we feel about, like, the handling of legacy characters, places, objects, stuff like that? Because I know we mentioned some of it some, but, like, in this script, you know, you mentioned they're doing a little bit of callback to, like, Old Republic and some of the legacy stuff. The holocrons and stuff from, like, the Clone Wars is brought up. Like, there, and then we even have, like, legacy characters like R2-D2 dies in war, but then is brought back to life. Chewie finally gets his medal. Like, I don't know. For me, I'm going to say legacy characters and stuff are handled just supremely better. Even the places like Coruscant, how this depicts Coruscant actually makes me feel better about the prequels. Like, I know that that's weird because I'm not a big prequels guy, but I'm reading this and I'm like, that's always been one of the big disconnects for my, like, imagination, I guess, is like, you watch the prequels in Coruscant and, like, that's what Star Wars is. It's like high tech, nice society, whatever. And then all of a sudden in the you know, original trilogy, you don't see any of that at all. Having this reference of, like, we're seeing the places that used to exist in the prequel, and this is what the Empire did to it, I don't know, it really helps me a lot, where I'm like, okay, I kind of feel like I understand Star Wars as a whole better, actually.
Yeah, I think just Coruscant in general is, like, peak Star Wars environment to me, just because it's awesome. The population's, like, 80 trillion or something. Like, there's no land left on this planet. The entire planet is a city. It's awesome. Super cool. There is one piece of land left. It's the very top of the tallest mountain that was on Coruscant. And it has its own plaza. And you're not allowed to touch it.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's super.
Yeah. It's in the Clone Wars, I think. Oh. It was definitely in a few books. It might have been in the Clone Wars somewhere.
So I know there is a Force planet that's like the Springwell or whatever in the Clone Wars, but do they reference this area of the Force, like the plane that they visit in this script? Is that referenced in Clone Wars at all?
Oh, yeah.
I thought so, but I couldn't
more than remember. Referenced. There you go there.
They go there. Okay. So that place was canon beforehand. Because I know some complaints that I've read about this script are like, the Force shouldn't be a place you should be able to just go to. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's already canon. Like, that is just a thing.
Yeah, like they meet the father and the daughter and the son of the Force. Yeah. Ahsoka, you know, the whole big thing.
Yeah.
But as far as legacy characters go, I think it is a better conclusion for every character from the original trilogy, bar none. C-3PO even has, like, you know, we've watched a whole bunch of movies about C-3PO denying his, you know, like, relationship with R2-D2. Like, he loves that little guy. And then he admits it. R2-D2 dies, and C-3PO is like, I don't know what I'm going to do without R2-D2.
Yeah. Oh, also, there's a really sick, scene where, like, BB-8, whatever he's doing, like, the upload of the data. And it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, we're just going to see all of the main Star Wars events, but through R2-D2's eyes. And, like, I'm convinced if we would see that on screen, it would bring tears to, like, at least me and Will's eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah.
The script is even like, this is a great catharsis for Leia and also us.
Yeah.
The script's less corny than Rise of Skywalker, but it's not corny at all, because it's definitely there, but it's all, like, you know, screenplay notes and direction. Like, it's not in dialogue.
Yeah. And Star Wars is always a little corny, I feel like.
It is.
Yeah.
Man, I'm trying to remember what made me think that. I was like, oh, wow, that's corny. Oh, it was something about Hux.
Hux? Okay, also, I like how Hux... Well, let's go ahead and go there. The characters that were established in the sequel trilogy. I have a lot of complaints with Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, okay, I remember. It was right before he ends his own life. And in the screenplay, is like, he realizes he lost the Star Wars. Hilarious.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
Hilarious.
I mean, which also a little bit shows a little bit of, like, the darkness in the rebellion, or, like, at least his perceived darkness, because, like, he had to be thinking, like, yeah, what they're going to do to me when they capture me has got to be worse than death.
Yeah.
And that's
which also, just to, like, put out the cool Star Wars technology, the Empire is using a light guillotine.
Yeah, that was sick. That was so cool.
On Coruscant.
That was so cool.
To kill rebels.
I mean, that part's less cool. But the fact that the tech exists is cool. I would have liked
which
to see
it. Which is just crazy. Yeah. We get a lot more out of the Knights of Ren.
Yeah.
Like, their characters.
That was one of my big problems with the sequel trilogy as a whole, is, like, in the comics and stuff, they really build up this whole, the Knights of Ren, and then, like, I think it's referenced in the movies, but I don't even remember seeing them, really.
They're there.
Yeah. Like, I assume...
The Knights of Ren are just the ones that they fight in the throne room with Snoke.
Oh. Yeah.
So they're less cool.
Yeah, I just completely ignored them.
Or they call them, like, the Imperial Guard or something. Yeah. That's who that was supposed
and
to
Rey
be.
And Rey just the completely kicks their ass. Because, like, Luke taught her, so, of course, she... And it's been a long period of time. It's not like, the last movie just ended here, we're picking it up. By the way, the Empire's here now. No, it's been a long period of time. She's been training with, literally, Luke, who was completely one with the Force.
Yeah. And even the screen direction is like, this is Rey, but not the Rey we know. She's bigger, stronger.
Yeah, like, noticeably
she's a grown woman.
She actually changed her clothes for once in the three movies. Crazy.
Yeah, and she made her own super cool lightsaber.
Yeah, that part also made a lot of sense. Because, like, I thought, when you saw her staff in the beginning, I was like, oh, she's going to get a double-bladed lightsaber. And just never happened. But then here, they're like, oh, yeah, she took that staff she used to have. And, like, you know how, like, Luke's lightsaber was, like, destroyed? Actually, she combined the two, and now she has a double-sided blue lightsaber, and it's cool. And I'm like, yeah, no, that is cool. I agree. Sometimes we just want cool-looking lightsabers.
Yep.
That's all.
That's all. That's why Visions did so well.
True! But, so, like, Rey, Finn, Rose, all of them, and we've talked a little bit already, but, like, how do you feel about the way that their stories progress in this telling? Because it's a lot more focused on them, I feel like. in this. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, I think Rise of Skywalker focused more on the Emperor's back, and we're doing like a big farewell to do to all Star Wars. This one's like, hey, we're just going to finish the story of the characters that this series is about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely better. Rose and Finn get a really nice conclusion. Poe gets, well, I guess he doesn't really get a conclusion, but he does. And then Rey shows up. So it's kind of like, well, I guess he'll find out eventually and then come back and hang out with her.
I will say this one feels more open. Like there could have been more movies. And I don't know if that's positive or not, but
yeah. At the very least, more TV shows.
You get a sense that Tho and Pan might be force sensitive, perhaps, but they don't really finalize on that in this script.
Yeah.
But the same thing happens with Huck. This is where I think it actually makes sense. I like to juxtapose, and I would like to think that the film would have done this really well.
Mm-hmm. Huxtapose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Huxtapose him and Finn. As both of them are like, oh, I think I might be force sensitive and really want to be, you know, Sith, Jedi, you know, whatever. And it just doesn't happen for them. Whereas Finn realizes his gift actually is inspiring other stormtroopers who have a story like his, and story is actually more powerful than cool lightsabers and inspires a rebellion. Whereas Hux realizes everything he's been lusting after, the power of the Sith, all that stuff is out of his reach. He'll never win. He'll never have it. And he's been collecting all these Jedi's lightsabers this whole time because he's obsessed with wanting that power, and he's never going to get it. So he takes one out that happens to be Mace Windu's lightsaber because that's the coolest looking one. If you're going to kill yourself, might as well do it on the coolest lightsaber you got.
Yeah, might as well.
Yeah.
And he just keeps trying to use the Force, and you almost feel bad for him because who wasn't trying to do that as a kid?
Yeah. And if you lived in this universe, of course you're going to.
Yeah.
Well, and that's
he even part. Tries it. He tries it when they're torturing Rose, and Rose is like, what you doing?
Which was just funny, actually. See, that's the kind of corny I love. But no, I that's part of what I loved about Last Jedi, too. Part of its message was anyone can have the Force. And here they're capitalizing on it. You see people with maybe hints who maybe they will, maybe they won't. And at the end, when you have Rey teaching the mop boy, teaching maybe Poe and Finn even, it's like, oh, yeah, the Force is open to everyone. And I don't know. I like that story a lot more, because how do you defeat an empire if the system just keeps perpetuating? But in this version of the script, the system doesn't keep perpetuating. She learns you can use dark side and good side for good of the Force, kind of like Grey Jedi, and is confirmed by Luke and Yoda and Obi-Wan. Like, yeah, actually, you're right. That is what we should have been doing. We were compressing our emotions when we shouldn't have been. And it's like, actually feels like they're wrapping up that story of how the Jedi messed up. And it's like, oh, now we have a real way forward. And also, yeah, maybe it's not about midichlorians. Maybe it's about like everyone has access and they need a good teacher who's willing to let them fully embrace who they are. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, man, like just messaging wise, it's just better.
And it's just way better.
And when Chewie's flying the X-Wing, one of my favorite things. Poe says that line that he says from Force Awakens, where it's like, now that's one damn good pilot, or, you know, whatever it was. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I need. I need more Chewie promotion in my Star Wars
content. Chewie in an X-Wing.
Yeah,
awesome. That's what we need. Such a cool scene. That whole siege of Coruscant. It's awesome. It's great.
Yeah. So one of the things, you know, I've mentioned, I want to buckle down a little bit more into this, like, what is true balance of the Force? And I'm going to make probably a bad opinion argument where I agree with this script, but, you know, it's our whole self, whether it's good, you know, the negative stuff like anger and force lightning and the positive stuff like healing and for some reason mind tricks.
Rey uses force lightning to kill one of the Knights of Ren,
which was so cool.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, she uses that. And then immediately she uses the mind trick to convince Poe not to follow her when she goes to the force planet. Because he was like, hey, you're gonna die, because she's, again, another thing that I feel like Rise of Skywalker dropped the ball on. It was just like, oh yeah, no, they were sharing dreams because the Emperor, that's why. This film was like, yeah, no, they're gonna keep sharing dreams. She sees his dream where he's trying to get to the Force planet in his lust of power, and she goes to stop him, and you're like, yeah, that makes perfect sense. He goes crazy in a lust for power while also Force Ghost Luke is antagonizing him, and she's like, yeah, I should probably stop the new Emperor Supreme from fully having access to the dark side.
Yeah. And it's, Oh, that is part
clear
of
your motivation.
Why? Yeah. I like that they reference the Old Republic a lot here, because one of the things that they do in Knights of the Old Republic 2, which is the best Star Wars game ever made, argue with a wall, except maybe Knights of the Old Republic 1, you have what's called a Force Link, and that's, you know, it's a video game, so that's what they insinuate your relationships are building on, is these Force connections that you're making with people, because you're Revan.
Yeah.
And you're just immensely powerful in the Force, so you're connecting with these people involuntarily, and they're compelled to follow you and do what you do and be more like you because your connection to the Force and to them is so strong. And it is gets to the point where his connection with Kreia, your connection with Kreia, is so strong that you feel it when her arm gets cut off. You feel it when she's in pain. Yeah. And that's what Rey has, and that's what Rey develops with, you know, everybody throughout the course of this script, and has always had it with Kylo.
Yeah,
that's you it, also I'm... learn Rey's last name. It's Solona or Solano.
Yeah, that was cool. I felt like unnecessary, but it was cool.
It was
also
cool.
She's not the grandchild of the Emperor for absolutely no reason. She really is just a person because anyone has access to the Force. Hey, let's capitalize on the message. That's great. I also really appreciate that when Kylo was dying, they didn't kiss. That was kind of cool. Glad that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
she kisses Poe stupid. Twice.
Yeah.
Three times.
Which makes way more sense. So back to the balance of the Force thing, though. I know that George Lucas has said the point always was balance is when the good side wins. And I'm just going to disagree with George Lucas. I hate to do that because, like, it's his property that he started.
Yeah.
Here's my argument, though. What he's doing with the Force is he was, what's that word? Appropriating. He was appropriating some of the religion of Taoism. That's why it's called the Force, because that's what the Tao is. It's just translated as the Force in English. And again, this is his story. It's cool. But if we're going to lean more into the source material, and we're looking at the Force and like, what's that origin? And we're going to be respectful of Taoism. That does mean you embrace your full self, all your emotions, the dark and the light side. You do it for good. It's more about the motivation rather than are you mystically part of this side or that side, you know? So that's where I'm like, I get where George is coming from, and I think you can make a really solid argument, like, this is his property, so what he says is the balance, that's the balance. But I'm thinking, hey, we're moving past George Lucas in these films. We're moving to the next generation, and part of what film and culture has done as a whole better is we've been more respectful of that stuff that we used to appropriate or kind of mock a little bit even. And I like Star Wars doing the same thing. We're like, hey, let's just be genuine. Like, hey, this is what the Force came from Taoism, and this is how Taoism treats this stuff, so let's treat it the same way. I'm a fan.
I think most other Star Wars properties at this point do kind of acknowledge that it's an actual true balance. Just by the definition of the word, balance.
Yeah. Also, the Grey Jedi exist, and they're freaking cool. And if I remember right, in Legends, doesn't Luke do kind of the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm like,
Grand Master Luke.
Just makes sense. As a whole, you know, when we're doing these episodes, we want to talk about the type of literature, which is weird to do when we're reading a script for a film. But still, EJ, curious, since this was never made into a film, we can actually do this a little bit more appropriately. How do you think format hindered or enriched the story for you? You know, like, do you think if you would have watched it as a movie instead, or if it would have been a comic, it would have been different? Like, are you glad you read it as a script?
Yeah, I think when you're reading a book, you know, you are, depending on the description that the author gives, you're imagining that scene, right? And it's most of the time, it's largely up to you what it looks like. And reading it as a script allows you to kind of mold your thoughts into what it could have looked like, because, you know, you can emulate the style of the director of the movie. So it makes it a lot easier to kind of put it into perspective of like imagining what this actual movie would have looked like. And I think it just gives you a very clear sense of what this could have looked like. And I like it. It benefits a lot from being a screenplay and not a novel.
Yeah.
Because this is designed to be a movie.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. And even as a comic, like, I kind of like being able to visualize it for myself. Of course, I would have rather this film be made, but getting to visualize it for myself reading through the script was actually just really fun. So I'm glad I got to experience it in this format. I'd be cool if they wanted to make a comic book or something of it at some point so we have more representation of the story. But I'm glad that I read this first. I do want to mention also, since we mentioned people who were making the film, This script was written by Colin Trevorrow and Derek Connolly. Trevorrow was going to be the director of the film if it had been made, which it was not. So there's that.
Hey, friends, your pal Will Rose here. Sometimes I ask myself, self, have you ever wondered how you can support Systematic Geekology? Yes. Yes, I have. And well, if you're like me, you want Systematic Geekology to continue to grow and thrive. And you can do that by joining Patreon for as little as $3 a month. As a patron, you get bonus episodes. We answer bonus questions that our patrons get to hear. We have special shout outs. We have certain episodes that the patrons pick. So you help us create and curate the content that we put out for the world to hear. You even get free merch. And when I say that we're a worldwide podcast, that I'm not being hyperbolic. Somebody told me that we have over 20,000 subscribers from all over the world. And just half of those subscribers join Patreon for $3 a month. We would be set on keeping moving forward with the tech that we need to have the quality of podcast that we want our hearers to experience. And it'll help us get to certain events and conventions so that we can see you face to face and geek out with you in person. And let me just share that there's no shame, no guilt. If you can't join Patreon at this point, that's okay. That's okay. Just keep listening, keep sharing, keep liking, because yes, we're proud of what we're doing at Systematic Geekology. And friends, guess what? You can subscribe to Patreon for free to receive one extra bonus episode a month via the Patreon or Spotify app. That is fantastic. And we're glad that you're a part of it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm glad I read it this way. Before we start wrapping up, you know, so this year on our podcast, we've been doing like polarization as our annual theme and trying to find the good as like our big, you know, series we've been doing each month. Kind of want to ask you, since we're doing a lot of comparison of Duel of the Fates and Rise of Skywalker in this episode, since, you know, Rise of Skywalker is what we got, Duel of the Fates is what we could have got for Star Wars Episode 9. If you had to pick the best thing and the worst thing about both scripts, what would you say? You want me to go first since I put you on the spot?
I definitely think the best thing about the Duel of the Fates script is Kylo and Rey's final, you know, battle. That whole scene.
Yeah, it sounds super sick.
I think that's way better, more thematically fitting for Star Wars because it's a lot more similar to the final battles that we get in the trilogy of Star Wars. They're, you know, even when they are just straight action, awesome lightsaber fighting, even then, when it was Obi-Wan and Anakin, it's a lot more about what's going on inside, and it's a lot more thematically relevant than actionably relevant, you know? It's not just to look cool. There's also a lot of deep motivations behind it, and there's a lot of meaning in the battle. I think that's done really well in Duel of the Fates. It's much, much better than the final confrontation in Rise of Skywalker, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
The worst part of Duel of the Fates is something.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably
maybe
true.
The Brute Troopers. The Brute Troopers really do kind of feel out of place and just not entirely necessary to, you know, to just to be there. And they're in there to emphasize that the First Order is, you know, cruel and evil and fascist, and they're extra bad. They made bigger, meaner stormtroopers that look like Mandalorians for some reason, but they're also all chrome.
Yeah. We also have just like way more reference to the Mandalorian stuff in this script.
Yeah, which is interesting. But that did make me think back to legacy characters. Even the Millennium Falcon got an upgrade at the end of the Duel of the Fates script.
That's right. That was
even
cool.
The Falcon.
Yeah.
Rise of Skywalker?
I want to like the Jeopardy music.
It's a cool ensemble.
Yeah.
Seeing everyone show up at the end, you know, Wedge, Lando, that's really cool. It's a really, you know, it is a feel-good moment, and hearing Obi-Wan and Yoda and Mace Windu and Anakin and Qui-Gon and, you know, Aayla Secura even. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. The worst part of Rise of Skywalker is probably the rest.
Just every part of the movie that isn't that.
No, it's definitely just the Emperor being back.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, the very first sentence in the scroll. Somehow the Emperor is back.
Yeah, okay. I do think that there's a way that that could be done well, because if you're familiar with his Sith lineage, it's Plagueis Vitiate. Well, it was Vitiate. Now, I guess it's, according to Duel of Fates, it's War to Room. But their whole lineage is dedicated to manipulating life and preserving their own life, which is, you know, also a trait of Dark
Nihilus. That's a deep theological conversation we could get into, too. We won't, but we could.
But that's what their whole lineage is about. So I do think there is a way that you could have done it pretty easily, where Sidious is still alive in some way. That is not what happened. He was just back.
Yeah.
Because cloned. Mm-hmm. Which is lame.
Correct. Yeah. Okay, I'll start with Rise of Skywalker. Best and worst. Best and worst. I really do have a hard time finding the best, because I really just did not care for most of that movie.
Oh, I take it back. Coolest part. Best part of Rise of Skywalker is in the giant fleet. One of the ships is named after Darth Revan.
Ah, cool. Not what I was about to say. I'm glad you didn't steal it right last minute for no reason. Lando. Lando is the coolest part of Rise of Skywalker. Just
that was my
him
answer.
Being there. No, it's not.
It was.
All right. The Lando worst part of Rise of Skywalker, other than all of it, I'm really trying to think. I think the worst part for me, this is going to get at what part of why I like Duel of Fates too. The worst part for me is how Finn and Rose were just kind of shrugged off. And Luke. Finn, Rose, and Luke were all just shrugged off. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The best part of Rise of... I already did best part of Rise of Skywalker, didn't I?
Yep.
Okay. Best part of Duel of Fates, Kylo. Kylo Ren. Like, the thing where, like, he learns how to absorb power, and that's why he gets so powerful, what makes him the ultimate threat. Because, like, for this to be the end of a saga, there needs to be a reason why he's so powerful, not just, it's the Emperor again. No, like, actually, he is the most powerful. He's way more powerful than the Emperor, because he just absorbed all this force from everything. He can't handle it. It's driving him crazy, but, yeah. Like, hey, at least that makes sense. Like, cool. I'm here for it.
Yeah. And it is, like, as soon as he figures it out, as soon as he learns it, the first thing he does is absorb the life force of a 700-year-old Sith Master.
Which is what I think is the worst part of Duel of Fates. That Sith Master existing. Because, like, my brain has such a hard time with, wait a minute, Sith, the rule of two, they all backtrade. How was Kylo the first one who decided, you know what? I'm gonna get him.
No, they got you there.
Okay.
He says when Kylo gets there that he is not a Sith Lord. Like, that's not a lot he associates with anymore. That's not him. He is Vore Tarum. He's not even Vore Tarum. He says, I used to go by that name.
Shoot, you're right. Man, the worst part. Worst part is I was reading part of the script while I was at work, and I had a tear in my eye when I read about R2-D2, and I tried to say it was because of the onions, but I was cutting jalapenos, so no one believed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jalapeno juice in the eye.
Yeah, that's what happened. I was like, no, not R2! Like, if I was in the theater, I really think I would have been just distraught.
Yeah. Especially for Finn to just, like, reach in there, grab his memory bank, give it to BB-8.
Just brutal, man. Also, I even think, like, her being blinded and having, like, the blindfold and fighting, I feel like the way I imagined it being framed was, like, kind of a shout out to Kanan. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of even references, like, Clone Wars and Rebels stuff that I'm like, also, Darth Vader's castle? Like, you still get Darth Vader and Emperor being represented in really cool ways without having to be like, they're back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also changed Kylo's mask.
In a way cooler way.
I wish there was...
Yeah.
You know, concept art of the mask.
I think there is. Or there's concept art of him getting it put on or something.
Yeah.
But anyway, this was a lot of fun to read. A lot of fun to just geek out on and imagine what if. That being said, you know, I know a lot of people love Rise of Skywalker. A lot of people love the sequel trilogy. It's getting them into Star Wars. I like more people loving Star Wars. I'm okay with Rise of Skywalker, even if I don't enjoy it. My wife loves shipping Kylo and Ray for some reason. I don't get it, but hey, it's cool for her. So we, you know, we're not just trying to bash it, but we do think Duel of Fates would be better, and we really love the script and think you should read.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap this up. As always, there will be a bonus question. Not as always, since this is part of our All Reading Counts series. If you're on Patreon already or subscribed, you will get this for free. If not, you can go to our Patreon and purchase separately the answer to our bonus question. And whatever money you give us, we will be sending to the public library in support of literacy. The bonus question will be, for those who are interested, if we could combine the scripts of Rise of Skywalker, Duel of Fates, just like pick our favorite bits and pieces to put together our own ideal episode 9, what would it be? If you want to hear that, you got to go over to Patreon. I think it's a pretty awesome bonus question, actually. Could be a whole episode, but it won't be. That being said, TJ, you know we have to recommend something from a kind of literature other than the kind that today was about. So you got to recommend something for people to read that just specifically isn't a screenplay. Very difficult.
No, that's hard. Yeah. Man, I pretty much only read screenplays. Man, that's rough. I don't want to recommend another like 40,000 word series to everybody.
I really ironically want to like recommend a Dungeon Crawler Carl just for Laura. But I've never read it, so I feel like I can't do that.
I've heard a lot of good things.
That's funny.
No bad things about it.
Maybe our patrons will vote for that in August when we do our next All Reading Counts.
Yeah. For me, it's hard to recommend written media.
I have one
that I haven't already recommended.
I have one. Earlier, I mentioned the last thing I read was the manga of Kingdom Hearts 358 by 2 Days. I'm not going to recommend that. I'm going to really specifically recommend the novella of Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories. Mm-hmm. Short novel. Personally, obviously, I think the game is the best thing to do because it's just fun to play the game. But if you're only after the story, I think the story is told better in the novella than it is in the manga or in the game. So story-wise, I think that was the best representation of Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories. Hmm. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Cool. Chain of Memories is fun, though. So
it is. It's a lot of fun. Especially if you can get the original copy, not the remastered one. I don't like the remastered as much. But yeah. DJ, did that help you?
Brightest Day and Blackest Night, Green Lantern. Sick. They're just some of my favorite comic books ever. And they're super sick. They're so cool.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, super they're fair.
So cool. It's just like, what if everyone was dead and also had a lantern ring?
It does. I have so many comics on my list right now, especially with the movies coming up in July. Fantastic Four, Superman. Okay, anyway. Guys, if you're on a laptop, please consider rating and reviewing our show on Podchaser or Good Pods. That's going to help our show gain recognition, make it easier to find on search engines like Google. If you're on your phone, consider rating, reviewing, or commenting on our show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That's going to help prioritize our show in those algorithms, which is where most people listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So thank you again so much for your free support. And just those couple seconds that you take to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, helps the show so much, you know, more listeners. Kind of why we do this, for people to listen. Also, because we like to talk to each other, but that's not important. Mm-hmm. Also want to thank our supporters from Apple Podcasts, Captivate, and Patreon. Today, we're specifically shouting out Aaron Hardy. Aaron, you rock, and I hope camp goes well. Remember, if you'd like your own shout out, like Aaron, you too can support our show for $3 a month on one of those three platforms, Apple Podcasts, Captivate, or Patreon. And if you want to hear more of our All Reading Counts episode, we did two this month, which is rare. You can hear all of our All Reading Counts with the link down below in the show's description. Of course, again, please remember you can purchase our All Reading Counts merch. You can go to Patreon, buy this bonus question separately, and we take all that money to support our local libraries. And we also want you to remember an extremely important thing. That's that we're all a chosen people, a geekdom.
Podcast fam, want to stay even more connected with the show? We've got you covered. Check us out on Instagram and Blue Sky, where we're posting exclusive content and bonus videos and fun updates that you won't get anywhere else. From sneak previews of upcoming episodes to bonus content, our social accounts are the best way to keep the conversation going. Plus, it's a great spot for you to interact with other listeners and share your thoughts. We love hearing from you. When you follow us, it helps us grow and continue bringing you the content that you love. Whether it's a funny poll, a quick clip from today's episodes, or just random thoughts, you'll feel more plugged into everything we're doing. So go ahead and hit that follow button on Instagram and Blue Sky. It's one more way to be a part of the show and keep the good vibes flowing. Thanks for being a part of the family, and we can't wait to see you there.
Hi friends, it's Laura here, and I just wanted to say thank you for listening to our show. Systematic Geekology is a part of a larger podcast network called the Anazal Podcast Network. Dummy for Theology is Joshua Noel's show discussing different theological topics from various perspectives and attempting to give people more questions than answers. My Seminary Life is Brandon Knight's show. It started as him going through what he was learning in seminary, and after he graduated, he's been doing independent studies and has a lot of fun series like on hermeneutics, Bonhoeffer Summer, and worship. And then Friday Night Frights is a monthly show with Christian Ashley and Joe Day. They have a vote on the Systematic Geekology Facebook group to choose a topic each month and discuss everything from cryptos to ghosts to aliens to serial killers and more. So we hope you'll give it a listen, and thanks for being part of what we're putting out there.